Nyanavahini, Chapter 10. The jnana derived from the mere hearing of Vedanta cannot be termed direct knowledge. Since the error of taking one thing as another is not removed by actual experience in such a learning process, how can it be treated as direct or authentic? No, it cannot be. It is indirect only. Of course, by hearing about the Swarupa of the Brahman, which is Sat, Chit and Ananda only, one may be able to picture it or imagine it, but one has to actually see the Brahman, the witness of the five sheets of the individual. These five sheets are the Annamaya Kosha, the Pranamaya, the Manomaya, the Vijnanamaya, and the Anandamaya. That is, the gross body or the food sheath, the energy or the vital airs sheath, the mind or the emotional sheath, wisdom or the intellectual sheath, and the spiritual or bliss sheath. You may know from the Shastras that he who has four arms and who has the Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma, the conch, the discus, the mace and the lotus, in each of his arms is Lord Vishnu. You may even be picturing him as such in your dhyana. But yet, unless you have actually seen him by your own vision, the knowledge gained by the study of iconography can never be equated with pratyaksha or direct perception. Since the form of Vishnu is considered different and outside, separate, when understood through the study of the Shastras, what you get is really indirect inference, not direct experience. Though a person is ignorant of the fact that the Brahman is his own self, not different or outside or separate, can he not realize himself as Brahman as soon as he hears the exposition of a Mahavakya like Tattvam Asi, Thou Art That, which reveals that basic truth? But he does not. You may doubt whether the knowledge got from the Shastras about things different from you, like heaven, etc., has any value. But you should not declare so, for the same Shastras have said that you are the Brahman itself, that you are fundamentally Brahman and nothing else, by means of Mahavakyas or great announcements. And they also warn you that direct experience is not got by the mere hearing of these Mahavakyas. The progress of the aspirant is of this nature. He reasons out with faith and care what he heard until he understands the characteristics of the Atma in an indirect way. Then, to bring that knowledge into the field of actual experience, he takes up the process of manana, that is, revolving it in the manas or mind. The Atma is present everywhere and is in everything. It is unaffected. It is omnipresent like Akasha or ether. It is even beyond the Akasha. It is the Akasha in the Chit or the universal consciousness. So it is referred to as Param or beyond. It is described in the Shrutis as Asango Ayam Purusha. This Purusha is unattached. The Atma is unaffected and untouched by anything. It is beyond everything and devoid of agitation or activity. You should not doubt whether it is unlimited or not. It is beyond the three limitations of space, time, and causation. You cannot state that the Atma is only in one place and not in another. It is not limited by space. You cannot state that it exists at one time and that at another time it does not exist. It is not limited by time. Atma is everything. There is nothing which is not Atma. Atma is all. So it has no limitations of vastus or name or form. Atma is full and free. Knowing this is the fullest jnana, the highest truth. A doubt may be raised here. If the Atma is immanent in everything, like the Akash, is it not a transformation, a vikara, a change? No. Existing, emanating, growing, changing, declining, dying. These are the six transformations of vikaras. But the Atma is the universal, eternal witness. Cognizing Akasha and the other elements, then hence it has no modifications at all. It is nirvikara. When it is said that the Atma is nirvikara, it means some other things have vikara or modifications. So the question may be asked, how then can the word Advaita be used? Now some things have vikara and some have not. But when there is nothing besides Atma, it is wrong to speak of a twofold entity. It is not two, it is one. There can be no doubt about this. It cannot arise. How can it be said that there is nothing outside the Atma? Well, for this reason, that the Atma is the cause of all this, and there can be no distinction between the cause and the effect. The cause cannot be without the effect, and the effect cannot be without the cause. Some might be suffering under the doubt. How can the Atma be the universal cause? The Atma is the universal cause because it is the universal seer. The seer is the cause of all the delusion of this world. The seer creates silver in the mother of pearl. The varied scenes of the dream world are the creations of the seer. So too, for the multiplicity of things experienced during the waking stage, the Atma, who is the seer, is the instrument. The world is an illusion, which on account of the play of Maya seems to be subject to evolution of names and forms, and involution of the same until the whole is melted in pralaya, or involution, or universal fires. An illusion disappearing with the illumination of jnana, as light dispels the delusion of the snake with which the rope was covered. Then the knowledge that the Atma is all fills and fulfills. One is Atma through and through. That is what the Shruti too declares. The Atma is always content and blissful. To you one thing appears more attractive than another, and so this sensual attachment and affection are the results of delusion and greed. It is like a dog that gnaws a bone, and when blood oozes out of its tongue and gets mixed with the bone, it relishes the bone the more for that additional taste. When it gets another bone, it drops the first one and runs after the second. What the Atma does is to superimpose upon the external, evanescent object its inherent bliss, and thus envelop that object with a certain attractiveness. Objects are taken to be pleasure-giving, but they are not really so. They only add to the grief. It is ever-changing, this affection towards things seen through the deluded eye. It is limited, not unlimited. The attachment to the Atma will not undergo any modifications. Even when the senses and the body fall, the Atma will remain and infuse bliss. It is unlimited and indestructible. Everyone has attachment to the self or Atma. It is of the nature of Paramananda. For this reason, it is also described as of the nature of Sat, Chit and Ananda. Are these three, Sat, Chit and Ananda, the characteristics or qualities of the Atma? Or are they its essence, its nature? A doubt of this type may arise. Redness, heat and splendor are the nature of fire, not its attributes. Atma too, in the same manner, has Sat, Chit and Ananda as its very nature. Agni is one, and Atma too is one, though both may appear as different. Liquidity, coldness and taste are of the very nature of water. Water everywhere is the same, no different. Atma is one. It subsumes all, and by knowing it, all is known. The Atma is the witness of the five koshas of the individual, the Annamaya, the Pranamaya, the Manomaya, the Vijnanamaya, and the Anandamaya kosha. How can it be all-knowing, it may be asked. Atma is Chit, and all else is Jada. Atma alone can know, nothing else is capable of knowing. And Atma knows that all else is Atma. Can the pot know the Akasha inside it? Though it does not know, the Akasha is there all the same. But the Atma in man knows even the inert that is of the senses. Thus, the body, the house, the field, the village, the country are all known. So too, the unseen items like heaven, etc., are understood. Though the multiplicity of body, country, etc. is non-existent, they appear so, because they are formed by the tendencies of the mind. They simply appear on the screen as different and varied. In the dream, though one experiences a multiplicity, one knows that they are unreal creations of one's own mind. This is clear to the witness of the dream. Similarly, the experience of the waking stage also is a mental picture at the most. People talk also of heaven, etc., though they have no experience. Investigation of the truth and unity behind all this is the duty of the jnani, his real characteristic.